Blogbus.net podcast network.
Welcome back after, gosh, a very long absence to Dystopian Present, the Hong Kong podcast about all things geekery, and today we are delighted to have back with us... Whoa, forgot, are you going...
I do names. I do, because I don't think you can not be a person on the internet anymore.
Well, everybody else... Okay. Backstory. Everybody else that appears on this podcast does.
Yeah, I remember Long Beach.
Yes, and well, you know, and that was perhaps the most sort of lighthearted of it. Most of my guests tend to go with somewhat sort of Kate Crusader-ish sort of secret identities and backstories. At any rate, so we are going with Nashua today?
We are, because I don't think there's any point
okay.
in not.
Hey, guess what, listeners? Nashua is back. And if Nashua is back, we must be talking about...
Game of Thrones.
Yes, season 6. Season 6 up to episode 8. Now here, I think, dear listeners, is what we're probably going to do this episode. We're going to talk through this series to date. We're going to talk a little bit about how it compares to last season and riff a little bit about how we like the off-roading experience now that we're no longer...
Guided by the books.
Exactly. And then we're going to finish up with some predictions for the end of the season, and then we're going to come back and we're going to score ourselves. We'll have a drinking game recap.
That sounds like a very responsible, appropriate thing to do. Because this show leads me to drink.
Yes, and it leads you to drink local, and... slight plug, even though they aren't sponsoring this show, when in Hong Kong, do stop by The Globe on Graham Street, serving all your locally brewed needs, including, this is Kowloon Bay's IPA. How are you finding it, Nashua?
Hoppy,
yeah. I mean, I confess, whenever I go into The Globe now, they just sort of, I am known as the American, because anything that has hops in it, they just throw in my face. I don't know. It was in the States a couple of weeks ago, and it has. I mean, I thought I liked big, bold American style IPAs, and I do. But there, everything, every craft brew has like a carefully gilded silhouette of a hop on its and you know what a hop looks like. Looks like a marijuana bud. So it's like everything kind of... You walk into a beer store in America these days, it looks like you're walking into a head shop. I mean, without the black light posters
and
the bombs.
Which, if you were in Colorado, I'm sure that's pretty confusing.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that there is something... They're fetishizing the herb. Grain, herb, whatever.
We speak the Queen's English.
No, we don't. I'm American.
So there are two types of hoppy, right? There's the... This is me riffing about something I don't know about.
Go on.
There's the fruity hoppy, which I think is this. And then there's kind of like the more Belgian, maple-y hoppy.
Well, actually, that was pretty good. Yeah. So, my father-in-law digs a lot. I'm not a big fan of. At any rate, bottom line is, here in Hong Kong, craft brewing experience is getting out of control. I think it's well in hand, but I think that there is a lot of experimentation happening with sort of the American IPAs in particular. Young Master does a really nice...
Moon Zen is probably one of my current favorite brewers.
Moon Zen?
Moon Zen Brewery in Hong Kong. And not just because they helped sponsor a really... interesting Peel Street poetry session we had at Cellar Door in K-Town, which is another great bar.
Right. K-Town short for Kennedy Town. Town. That's what us Hong Kong hipsters call the West Side.
And they're absolutely fantastic. They had this Szechuan peppercorn beer. And they also had this, like, they also had this vanilla chocolate infused goddess beer. It was called Moon Goddess from Moon's Own Brewery. But what I'm saying is the Hong Kong brewing scene is.
Yeah, okay, when we're already going off into the Earth Mother hippiness of it, you know it's gone full circle. Cool. All right, so that beer interlude brings us back up to our main topic. But, all right, if I can kind of tweak this riff, sort of bend this riff like a pipe cleaner into the main event. Everybody who's sort of read the books and kind of watched the series, we'll come back to kind of the differences, but one of the things you approach Game of Thrones with is an appreciation of the gluttony and gourmandness that happens in the books. Certainly more so than the show. But
yeah.
I suppose one of the things that I missed in this season has been the fact that there's been no attempt, and maybe this is because, again, they're off-roading now, they're going away from George R.R. territory. There's no, you know, there's no, not as much feasting. I mean, there's a lot of wine drinking.
There is. It's almost like it's been sponsored by a sommelier. Even just the past episode, there was like a full 3 or 4 minutes of Tyrion just talking about wine.
Right.
And you're right, there hasn't been that same level of feasting. And one of my favorite things about any kind of, even though it's a somewhat fake period in time, you know, I love reading about the food. I love reading about, you know, the indicators of, I suppose, the period and the time. It's fun. It's kind of, it helps illustrate the whole picture.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's one of those, one of the elements of off-roading, I guess, where you have to rely on the show more than your prior knowledge of what's going to happen, where you can't have both those things come together to kind of have this great collaborative experience of the Game of Thrones world.
So, collaborative, you mean sort of sharing it with others? I mean, you know.
No, I mean the book and the show.
I dig it.
So it's context,
right? Okay, so then let's start here. You know, sort of, can you separate the two? Do you think that this first kind of two-thirds, or, well, 80%, as it were, of this season has been more or less enjoyable because it is being untethered from the source material?
It's exciting. Okay. But every single week there's this moment, because of how Game of Thrones is structured, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the, this is what happened last week, and then you've got 2 minutes of that intro music. And in that period of time...
Did you actually sit through and watch the 2 minutes in the intro music?
No, that's when you're out getting your tea or, you know, or whatever. And we're very sophisticated.
Yeah, okay. No, but you don't... okay, but you don't fast-forward through it.
I can't.
Oh.
Because I watch it on the Monday night, like a good fan should.
Okay.
And then I'll rewatch it to see what bits they deleted because of Southeast Asia censoring.
Is it? I mean, I actually never...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sometimes it stops at, like, 50 minutes. Particularly that, I think a couple of episodes ago when you had...
A lot of wiener.
Oh, no, actually more girl-on-girl action. That was just completely axed. Anyway, it's at that intro bit that every single week I sit there and think, oh, goddamn, I hate the show. I hate it. I don't care what's going to happen next.
Like,
I'm never going to watch after this.
Cigarettes or crack?
No.
Or cigarettes.
and you sit there and you think, you know, it's like, why do I put myself through this? They're going to kill everyone.
But why this season in particular?
Because I don't have the safety net of knowing what's going to happen next. So I need to be like other viewers that haven't read the book. Ahoy, polloi.
No. You're the hoi polloi.
I'm the hoi polloi.
You've come down. You've had your comeuppance. Which actually, I love that word.
It's like thematically, it actually fits in very well with
so
the
now
whole...
You're slumming.
I've got short hair, I've got plain clothes.
People are flashing themselves in front of you.
No, that's just like a usual
word. Just Thursday in Central. So
we were talking about the safety net of the book being gone.
So it's gone.
How are you finding it?
Well, to be honest, I found the last whole book somewhat infuriating, or rather incredibly infuriating, and haven't read any of those spin-off bits, and it was kind of, I was looking forward to going off-road. This has all been, like, you know, when you finally leap off a cliff and into pool that you know is probably deep enough, but you're not 100% sure it is. Okay, that's sounding a little too over-poetic, but the point is I kind of...
So we're talking about a puddle here, or a pool that's like 4 to 6 feet deep. It's just this paint picture for me if we're going down.
Yeah. So we're on a cliff in Bali, and... No, it's...
It's not that fancy. I mean...
No, it's not, but the point is that sort of I was kind of... I've kind of been getting tired of, well, it's hard to say that when it comes to sort of SFF literature in general, I'm a fairly big snob, and I'm very picky, and I pick up books and I was like, okay, this is a good premise. Like, everyone and their mother told me that the name of the wind was going to be the best new thing, and
you know, all these mothers you're talking to.
Yeah, I know. Hey, man. Well, and, you know, I mean, I hang out with a lot of mothers,
including
exactly. Yeah.
Let me frame it
differently, but let me just put it in there. I don't like a lot of fantasy series, even though I grew up mainly reading it. I am
certified geek.
But it's hard for me to get into them because they disappoint so often. I think Martin's last book, I forget what it was called, a riff on murder of crows and
a sword somewhere. It's been so long, I can't even remember. It's almost like I don't care anymore.
Winter's coming, part 5.
Yeah.
But
winter is still coming.
Trust me, right around the corner. It dissipated, it just wove kind of. Thing wove bits together that didn't need weaving together, and all it really did was sort of set up the Jon Snow.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So,
yeah.
I think I don't know if we can call it formulaic, or if it's just a case of after 6 seasons we were waiting for things to happen and they happened. So one of them was Jon Snow. He's alive.
Mm-hmm. Did you want that to happen?
Of course, I wanted that to happen.
Just because.
Just purely on optics.
I wouldn't have pegged you for a man bun girl.
That can be fixed. A man bun can be fixed.
It hasn't been fixed. Sansa hasn't kind of ripped it off the back of his head.
So that was going to. Because it was such. The last season was just. Leading up to such a cliffhanger, and we knew that those cliffhangers were going to be. Will they use clips? So, Jon Snow was one of them. Arya was another one. Okay. Sansa, to a certain extent, was another one. Because the narrative has told us so far, since when things go awfully, awfully wrong, there has to be some kind of comeuppance, or there has to be some kind of, you know, give back to the audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Tyrion and Daenerys, we knew that she'd been really weak and slow, and something awesome had to happen to remind us that she is worthy of her 20 billion syllable title.
Right. And are you convinced? I mean, now that she's kind of burnt down every...
I didn't expect those things to happen the way they did, but I knew they were coming. I knew that each of those characters were going to have... some sort of defining moment, and it all happened.
Mm-hmm.
So Arya's one took the longest. It just happened when she says, "My name is Arya Stark, and I'm going home, and I am immune to being stabbed, apparently." So, in that sense, I haven't really been surprised. Have they been playing to an audience that want instant gratification?
So wait, you're thinking this season more than last has been kind of the millennial?
Yeah, I think so.
Generation pleasing.
Not all millennials are bad.
We
totally need to rebrand this as the millennial and the not.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Not because, you know.
You're the exception that hasn't quite proven the rule. But leaving aside, I mean, we all have attention issues, but are you feeling... do you feel that things have sped up unseemly?
No.
In other words, do you think
it's been such a slow climb that the next part had to be of a certain magnitude, of a certain kind of, you know, flair, and it has been.
So, quick takes.
Mm.
Daenerys. Yeah. Did you find her?
I've always dug her. I always think
was the whole sort of, I'm going to burn all the Brodraki.
The Brodraki.
I'm going to burn them down to the ground. Convincing?
Well, I think if we're going to scale her badassery from season one to season six,
but she had two
solid four.
She had two out of what scale?
Four out of five.
Out of six?
Yeah.
Show me your hands. You count in base 12. What?
So, speaking of this, let's talk about the female characters this season.
Okay.
Starting with Daenerys, I think I've been satisfied as a viewer. Whether it stands up in the canon is something else to be determined. Until I see that happen in the book, I don't think I'm going to have a fully formed opinion, because it was great, and it was gratifying to see her burn some people down. Burn it all down!
Right.
And it was great to see everyone go, "Oh, look, she killed a bunch of people. Let's all bow down, bitches." Like, that was great. She's the Beyoncé of her time.
Right.
You know, they're the Fire Hive. But...
did she feed her horse to that dragon before she rode it back?
I don't know.
I'm just wondering, you know, in that 4 out of 5, does that include sort of mount exchange?
Mount exchange. It is to be determined.
Okay.
So that was my opinion, Daenerys. What do you think?
Well, where to start? Because you've raised two important points here. Sort of Daenerys as you know, as your avatar. I was actually expecting you to come with sort of platinum locks today that you sort of...
I went for the brown instead.
Right, yeah. Sort of inching your way towards Daenerys' fabulousness. The one point you made her ascendancy as a powerful female character, and the question I had, and thank you for sticking to the show notes, the question I posed to you is this the most feminist season of Game of Thrones yet? Because we kind of start to see a lot of the core female characters digging their heels in and becoming influencers rather than just sort of yanked around and occasionally lashing out, but I don't think
feminist is the right word. I think in terms of character development, they've been given a lot more time to grow into their characters. And can I just interlude on my favorite female character so far in the season being Lady Mormont? Oh my gosh, she was like half orphan, just badassery.
Everybody likes those, you know, those pompous 10-year-olds.
Unless you're raising one.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I was going to say,
they're just
know,
the worst.
No.
But, you know, chutzpah.
Yeah.
She's got 62, 64 men.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm raising a pompous 15-year-old, which is sort of, you know, kind of like raising Daenerys Sans dragons. But,
I'm sure she'll find things of dragon-like proportions.
Well, so there again, you know, you've got this sort of spark plug of a Bear Island mini badass, and you've got Daenerys, you've got Sansa, kind of more or less kind of
Sansa turning into cat,
right?
She, and, you know, her mother's picture. But that's
right.
I think that's what's happening here.
And then with
Arya.
Brienne as her sort of, you know, fist of power.
I love Brienne. Brienne is she is just always on brand. I have my honor, I have my liege, and those are my two things.
Which is why I was, I suppose, and I think I remember this, my book memory is dim, but the whole siege of River Run, I know that they kind of, the Jaime and Brienne meetup, was it there, was it not there, was it... Do you remember?
I am as hazy as you are,
okay.
Because it's been years since
right.
I last read that book.
At any rate, I kind of knew that it was bound to happen, and I was looking forward to...
I like their
to,
friendship.
Yeah, well, I mean, as someone... I think I was reading some other piece of analysis, or maybe listening to another lesser podcast on the subject, but...
of course, much lesser.
But the point
are
was
still
made,
out there?
The point was made that... Jamie needs Brienne because she's the only one that sort of takes him at his
as
word.
Him, yeah.
Right, everyone else calls him Oathbreaker. She's the only one that believes that he is capable of keeping his oath. But and she is the only knight in this whole freaking universe that is actually
honorable.
Living by the code. So taken all together, back at you, sort of. Fireball, is this...
Wrong cannon.
I know. Does this imply, or is this... Do you think that this is commentary, that most of the women are who are kind of growing up, maturing, influencing the outcomes of the universe, are they trying to say something about... the influence of women in this universe, or do you think it is less impactful than that?
I think that the Game of Thrones as a principle is a great equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got Tyrion on one end, you've got Sansa, you've got, you know, Sansa who's always looked as somebody really weak, and she was always groomed to be a lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to find her chops. And there was Arya, who was always, you know, a little rapscallion, and she ended up killing people and deciding that, hey, I don't want to murder for other people, I want to murder for me.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And then there's Brienne, who had to fight so hard to get to where she is, and because of that fight, she is, that commitment to the cause is... even more impactful. So
are you going to make me ask the question again?
No, I'm leading up to the answer.
Okay.
I will maintain it is not a feminist thing. It's about character development.
Okay.
And I think the Game of Thrones has equalized across all these different characters. Yes, I did mention male and female characters, but these are people with very visible or physical or very status-like limitations to them, and it's all just been thrown into this whirlwind, and what comes out of it are people that have to, I don't know, earn their chops.
Right.
And
so
sense,
we should just sort of judge and relate to characters that are either sort of, that are kind of
whatever
earning,
floats your boat,
earning,
yeah.
Well, okay, so this leads me to the next thing in the show notes, which is the fact that everybody is kind of, in a sense, and I can't tell if this is commentary, if this is intentional, or if this is just a desperate attempt to keep the melodrama rolling. But everybody claims family, loyalty, fealty, you know, all these sort of higher order needs are driving them forward. But we've seen season after season, book after book, that it's really these things
are tenets of their time.
Well, yes, but where I was going with this is that they are actually convenient excuses / window dressing over their baser instincts. In other words, we're interpreting the need to preserve family as, or rather, we're telling ourselves and others that we keep family first, largely just to cloak our own greed and thirst for power. You know, the Lannisters always pay their debts. I mean, sort of the notion, yeah. The financial element is encoded into that, but it also leaks into how they view others and view transactions.
Well, don't you think that the self is very much embroiled in? Because you have to remember, when we're looking at it from a contemporary point of view, certainly within this universe, if you do well, it is your family that benefits. Right?
It's
very
true.
Asian sort of kind of, you know, spin to it. But
they cut out all those scenes of the Starks going to cram schools. And,
well, yeah, of course.
It's going to be in the ultra.
It's in the director's cut. But do you know what I mean? There is definite self-interest in there, because you become a legend. You become a Mad King or you know, whoever. You become the guy that your descendants talk about because you took the family name and you restored it to power. Of course it's self-interest, but it's self-interest fueled by a greater ideology of there can only
be... But is it really... That's my point. Is it really a greater ideology?
I think it's justification.
I think, you know, does Dany really see that she's inheriting
this...
Dany
is pissed off.
I know she's...
But let's So, I think it is an important component in motivating that person.
And this is a podcast, so your over the eyebrow sort of glares are not going registered.
Oh, they know. I think it's a really important piece. You can't just claim self-interest. I think if you go into something because of your house or you, who you pledge allegiance to or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then that gets you into a whole crock of shit, then you've got further justification to bring yourself and said house out of said crock of shit.
But that's just... Okay, so this is my point, sort of, and again, maybe because we're sort of... It's a season without a net. There's no book underneath.
Mm.
And you and I both kind of, you know, are sort of both... simultaneously thrilled and scared and freestyling into this, like, good lord, we don't us hoi polloi don't know what's coming next, but within that things seem to be
it's spinning out of control, but it's still there is a whisper of it still as that baseline structure to society. That is how people see the world and understand the world, therefore it's all kind of gone insane at the moment, and everyone's warring.
Would you say that it's never going to be the same again? No, I would say there was ever thus. I would say there's always been chaos fueled by self-interest masquerading as policy.
Yeah, but that's every modern economy and country that I know.
Okay, fair enough. So again, how much of this do you think is consciously written into the series versus just kind of, you know, we're trying to push the show together,
but I'm pretty sure that George R.R. Martin is making some kind of statement, and it's going to be very clear to us. I mean, we can riff about what we think that is, but
you're sounding like a Scientologist. L. Ron will make it clear to us in his next book.
In the
book.
End, we just have to stick through the intro, that 2 minutes of that music, and this is what happened in the HBO logo. We just gotta get through
do you,
that.
Okay, so can I just ask you, do you really honestly think, do you think he's gonna finish another book?
He's nearly finished. He's been reading them, like excerpts from this book at different events. Okay. It's nearly done. That's what the internet tells me, which I've been raised to believe.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, I've not heard it from a rotary phone, so I can't trust it.
The humans are coming back.
Well, well, as an information access device, they are unparalleled. Quickly with your, anyways, without sidebarring too overly much, I actually wanted to come back to this because you said earlier that you won't really, and this is very interesting to me, you won't know what Daenerys' sort of deal is until she actually has been kind of her story has been carried out in the books.
Yeah.
Like, so I've been going at it from a much different perspective. I'm assuming that, you know, George R.R. goes home, dives into his Scrooge McDuck pool of Game of Thrones HBO money,
yeah,
and does not come out any time soon. He just, I mean, and no shade thrown.
Sure,
he
filthy
just,
mouth.
No.
I'm sorry. I will read that book, even if I have to write it myself.
But and maybe part of this is informed by the fact that I'm growing kind of tired of his perspective on things. As I said, I thought the last book was kind of meandering. So
the last book was very much meandering.
So I'm assuming that that he's not going to do anything. He's going to definitely have to do, you know, something different.
Otherwise, he's going to
turn into Alan Dean Foster. You know,
I don't think he's going to leave it sloppy. I will disagree with you on that.
Okay.
I don't think he's going
to... Let's put
some money on it.
$50 says he's
on what? Like a satisfying ending?
No, that he will finish the next book.
He's finished it, man.
Okay. $50.
$50.
Alright.
So
you hear it first.
The Winds of Winter release date, news and updates.
From
GameGuide.com.
Stop it.
Again, I Google things on the fly. That's what I do.
No, I know. But we're sort of, you know.
I can do two things at once.
I know, but doesn't make for great radio.
Well, they can't see.
As I said, it doesn't make for great radio.
So, self-interest is very important, but it's also fueled by this hubris of house. You know, my house is going to come on top, or, you know, we're going to restore glory, and it's all about the... I mean, how long do these people live until, like, 45?
They all seem to be...
Daenerys is 14 years old. But let's just remember that.
Everybody's, like, plus 10 years than their book age, you know?
Sure. But, because, you know, we...
Right.
We can't be that contemporary on TV.
Yeah, and you know, years are a screwy thing anyways, because I still don't understand this. You know, the world... Whatever world this is, it goes around the sun. It goes, you know, how is it that their winters can be of variable lengths? Like, you know, does it not have the same orbit around the sun as everybody else?
Have you ever read Philip Pullman?
I have indeed.
This world's all kinds of...
Yeah, okay, so you think this is a world that just doesn't do straight up normal astronomy?
Yeah.
Okay, fine, fair enough.
They have a fire god.
We have fire gods.
In this particular case, a real-ish fire god that brings my beloved Kit Harington back from life. So.
I really think you should have gone with the Alice Band. Anyways, let me pose a question to you to kind of put this...
You're not going to like the answer.
I know I'm not. Hating answers already. Edmund and Mir, what's the dude's name?
The Blackfish. Blackfish's nephew.
Was convinced by Jaime to...
That is a case of self-interest.
But what I'm saying is... So my argument is that's just another case of self-interest.
Okay,
Jamie put it very boldly, where he's like, "Hey, man, I, you know, you caught me. I'm an oath breaker. I'm a sister fucker.
I'll fuck you over.
And I just want to get back to my twin sister. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was, you know, he was sort of. Keeping it, like, Jamie is emerging as the guy who keeps it real in this environment. Sort of like, you know, I know what it means to be a man of my word in a real sense. And then this dude kind of caved and ended up killing everybody's beloved Blackfish in the process. So was
he
really?
I think the Blackfish got a glorious ending. You know, with the last thing he said.
It was okay. It was off screen.
It was off screen, which is sloppy. But you know, there was not enough gore. So I don't think you can make a judgment on the entire direction of where the series is going based on Edmund.
No, I'm okay. You're missing my point.
Let's go at it character by character. Okay, Tyrion is all about self-interest. He doesn't give a fuck about being a monster.
But that's not true either, because he's, like, brokering deals to phase out slavery, and he's, like, taking these higher order
missions. But he's not doing that under the name of Lannister. He's doing that in self-interest from the perspective of self-perseverance, and also maybe kind of believing in a higher cause that he can pretend in this out-of-Westeros world, okay? That's Tyrion. Then we've got Daenerys, who's all about the House Targaryen and revenge and vengeance and this inherited vengeance that could be fueled by her own need for blood and her background and her own want to destroy things with dragon. Cool, but it's still very much branded under the House of Targaryen.
Yeah.
Then we've got Arya Stark, who is similar, hellbent on getting revenge because she feels so violated that anyone would do to the House of Stark what they have done. And there's Sansa, which very similar sensibilities, but Sansa's all about power as opposed to, you know, getting back, getting involved, getting her fingers dirty in the gore element. Jon Snow is just caught up in this mess. He's like, fuck, I'm no longer dead. The guy's like, just basically, why did you not leave me? Like, why did you not leave me lying there in the cold? We can pause.
Okay.
No, that's alright. No, go for it. Go for it.
Oh man, now you've created an editing event.
You've broken the podcast.
I think really...
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
No, because I read the books and I got exceedingly pissed off when I got to the end of the last one and I realized that his work ethic is, oh, it's 5 o'clock, I gotta go, boom, drop the pen and never wrote again. So,
right.
No.
I don't think, So and like I said, I don't think he's, you know, he's not finishing the books. What were you looking for?
I was looking for a bowl of water that has been gone.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay.
I drank that.
You're the worst.
Yeah, I'm the worst. I owe you something very.
That's okay. It's not a big deal. You guys enjoy your Who's Riding podcast. Tell the world. I don't know.
Okay, we're up to...
I'm going to cut you off there because... yeah, only because the main thing is that however noble or ignoble their aspirations are, their actions are, it is still... Everybody has a different interpretation of what fealty, loyalty, and family means.
Sure, but they've been raised to look at life through the lens of fealty, loyalty, and family.
Right.
So,
but I guess so. My meta thing, and this is what I want you to react to. I actually think all this is sort of a commentary on how essentially vapid any of this is, and in other words, sort of it's a statement against family, against fealty, against a sense of loyalty. This is, in a sense, an anarchic. I can always mess up that. It is an anarchist's perspective on what political systems and family systems should be.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I didn't think you did.
Because one of the reasons we root for the underdog is also embroiled in that whole sense of what is right and wrong. And in this particular canon of right and wrong, it is through the lens of the houses and the way things are.
But everybody's got that's the whole point. Everyone's got their different take on it. I mean,
sure, they've got a different take on it, but they're also having to semi-play by the rules. Things like, I will raise your banners, my banners for House Stark, because that's how it's always been.
So, but the next guy they went to in that, let's take that.
He said no. So the first, you're right. The first, you know, we're the both little, right, little fire. Because I'm always right.
Right, yeah.
So we are looking at a time that is going through some periodic change in terms of
dragons
and like zombies,
right?
Cold,
yeah.
Zombies, but yeah. Apart from all that, it's also there's poverty. People are at a point where everyone's at war. The public that seems to be not there. It seems like there are 50,000 people in this entire kingdom, and
hey man,
half of them are at war.
Flying extras to Iceland, that's expensive.
That's expensive. There are people in Iceland, just
well, there's, you
so
know,
you
besides
know.
But Bjork's always on tour, and you know, there just aren't that many other people.
Who books Bjork anymore?
Hey man, I'd go see Bjork in a heartbeat.
Cool.
I'd see a Stricker Cubes reunion. You had that millennial glaze.
Glaze, yeah. So
you're
moving
referring
on
to something before 1995.
Hey, I was alive then too.
I know, but disinterested in the sugar cubes, apparently.
So we got to, is there some kind of bizarre transformation in terms of society and in terms, or is this going to be canonized and is this going to be glorified as something?
Well, okay,
different?
So hang on, you're still obsessed with canon. I believe that canon is dead. That this is the
well,
TV.
I see our problem there.
I think the show is the canon now. We will agree to disagree on that. But the other thing that we are also agreeing to disagree upon is that, in a sense, this world is, we both agree that it's probably not the most moral world, but what I'm saying is everyone's got their sort of own moral relativism going on, and everyone's compass is basically pointing to themselves, and
because it's about survival at the moment.
Right, but you seem to hold on to this belief that there is a greater order in possible.
No, since it's not, I don't think there is a greater order, and I don't think it ever worked. I think that order had cracks in it, and that it all just went to shit, and everyone's warring, and everyone's having to, I think what they're doing is they're justifying their actions through the idea of this greater order.
Right.
That's what they're doing. So yes, it's self-interested, but all of them are doing it from the perspective of restoring their house to greater glory.
Right. Okay. So, moving swiftly along, what were your top lightning round?
Okay.
What'd you love most about the season to date? Scenes, characters, whatever. Go. Top.
Well, I already mentioned Baby Mormont.
Little bear.
I've actually really loved the little comedic interludes of Brienne and that what's his name?
Podrick.
The ginger dude that's clearly like digging her.
The wildling.
And told
Giant Slayer,
through
Giant Slayer. Told
through the reactions of his companion of like, okay, well that's interesting.
Let's see. Okay. Do you think that's gonna happen? Do you think there's gonna be
Make the call. Sure, why not? I think, it's already paid itself. It's done its penance in terms of comedic value, so I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I can't say Jon Snow coming back was one of my favorite moments. I kind of expected it to happen.
Okay.
So, and the whole, I felt at the time immense gratification of Daenerys doing more than being advised on what to do.
Yeah.
So when she, committed mass murder through arson, that was kind of cool.
When is it not?
Yeah, maybe those might be my top three.
Okay.
Or are yours?
Okay, so...
I might change mine.
Working backwards, I actually felt that... I mean, I've been kind of generating a huge amount of tacit support / love for Cersei this whole series, so...
Interesting.
I actually think that... Well, maybe it's the pixie cut that does a lot for me. when she decided to just sort of take down and say, I'm going for violence and let the mountain rip open.
Didn't put that in the in like the trailers.
Oh,
she
I
goes,
didn't.
I choose violence.
Yeah,
because I think that would have been more impactful.
No, you're probably right.
If I hadn't seen that already,
you're such a slave to the way media tells you to consume itself.
If it's in
itself.
Front of me, I'm going to click it
right.
or tap it.
Got it. I got it. I got it, and I will not make any millennial jokes here.
Really?
For once. Anyway, so Cersei in general, and actually on this sort of just, I would say it's all moments of badassery.
Mm.
I've been sad that the Dorne snake women haven't done more. Maybe they'll all come back, but I liked their sort of cleaning house thing. I liked early on when they were just scrubbing the house of all their dead weight male hairs and putting spears through faces. That was good.
Cool. Interesting.
But finally, I think the whole sort of Jaime kind of getting closer to himself through conversations with people he's either about to torture, kill, or dismember, or Brienne. I think that sort of, I think he is going to emerge as kind of one of the
black sheep, dark horses.
Well, he already is both those things, but I think he actually is kind
color
of
color farm animal.
Yeah, color farm animal. He's going to color farm animal the hell out of this season. I think he will kind of end up being kind of as I've said, there is no moral compass in this show. I think he actually will emerge as.
I quite like his honesty, to be honest. I mean, it's...
Well, think, you know, once you lose your right hand, what else you got?
Yeah, but he's always been... He's never made any apologies. I mean, he's gone from wanting to murder Bran to... You know, he's eaten humble pie, but he just kind of just does his own thing, and he justifies it to himself, which is interesting.
You make him sound like a... an itinerant like surfing instructor. I mean,
which in
I'm
another
just
life,
doing my
don't
own
you
thing. You know,
so,
I really like my sister, but you know,
there's one thing we haven't touched on, which I think
which
we
is,
really need to.
Which is what?
Hold the door. Your thoughts?
Yes and no.
Sloppy.
I thought it was so sloppy. I had this sort of running dialogue with a number of my friends about. Did you ever see the movie? Yeah, Time Travel. Yeah, yeah.
I guessed that right. Okay.
You guessed that, and maybe you did in an alternate state,
and then I came back to inform
came
my
back.
Current state
yeah.
for this podcast.
Well, I mean, you know how everyone sort of assumes that the old three-eyed crow is basically Bran, from the future coming back. To kind of advise himself.
Yeah.
So within that scene, there were like two. There were two loop de loops of time travel. Did you ever see the movie Looper? I have to be very quick about this.
No.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis.
I have actually, but I don't remember.
That's good and bad. But what it does do is.
That means it's bad.
No. it's good in that it does give you a sense of
gratification as a viewer.
Well, particularly if you're into kind of time travel conundrums. Anyways, I think that the whole explanation as to how Hodor came to that place was actually very well done. But the whole sort of Hodor, hold the door.
I will agree with that. I think that was really interesting. You know, in a series where we've seen giants and people coming from the dead and zombies as well as living, breathing people, like just all sorts of craziness across the sci-fi sphere.
Yeah.
Why not throw in a bit of Doctor Who? You know, just keep it real.
Yeah. I also didn't like the elves were treated or forced.
The children.
Yeah, whatever.
The elves.
They're elves.
Not Lord of the Rings, the other one.
I don't agree, man. You know, they're elves.
They got giants,
they got elves.
Okay.
They got dwarves.
Well, they did actually have fire. Little orbs. So, look, all that aside, so I thought, okay, well, time travel, sure, but the whole Hodor being hold the door just.
Fine.
Didn't really do it for me.
And you know, that in and of itself will sell this episode, being the kind of pushing back against the whole sort of love of the Hodor episode will be the contrarian view here. Fuck Hodor, man. Alright, so very super lightning round. Next two episodes. Big predictions.
So we've got the Battle of the Bastards coming. I'm really hoping.
Don't hope.
I want Ramsay Bolton to die. I think that would. But then at the same time.
Will he die?
I don't know. There's an element of just not getting what we want with the series, and they want to leave us in a cliffhanger. Maybe they both die. To be honest, I don't care. Jon Snow has been boring as fuck. He hasn't done anything interesting since he's come back, apart from wear an extra fur coat.
Right, hey man.
So, and
been fine.
That was great, good for him. So that's.
You don't like your men in fur?
I don't want to be furist.
Okay, fine. Okay, so Battle of Bastards, you don't care, but you hope they both suffer. Then you hope them.
I don't mind Jon Snow's to. I just want him to prove he's worth being alive or brought back.
Okay.
Daenerys, what is she going to do? Well, that last episode, she burst in through the. I thought that was
like
really
Batman.
Contrived. I thought that was so contrived and really predictable.
She was Batman. She was Dragon Woman. She just.
And then the silhouette of the dragon in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like.
In case you didn't know how she got up to the top of that ziggurat so quickly.
I just thought, okay, well, so she swoops in. That got a bit predictable.
Okay, so then predict what's going to happen next.
She's going to defeat the slave lords by making some kind of speech and then killing people with her fucking dragon, like she's done before. She has speeches, she kills people, sometimes the dragon is involved.
Alright, push it forward one more step. Is she going to get ships from the...
Yes.
The lesbian Viking or the misogynist Viking?
She's probably going to use the ships of the slave people that have just come.
She needs neither the lesbian Viking nor the misogynist Viking.
She doesn't need either of them.
Okay. That's too bad, because I like the Vikings in general.
Oh, I like them too in general. I mean,
but
the whole, you know...
Anywhere.
You know what I would love to see as a... I would love to see Reek or...
Theon,
as he's coming back to be, become a person again. I would love
so
to
would
see
So would his sister.
That.
I mean, that's kind of... That's
Asha?
Yeah. Or what? No. Wait, isn't there this whole thing? Is that what she's called in the book, or the movie,
comic book? Or
yeah, exactly. What is she called on Twitter? Anyways, whatever.
Wait, the lady.
Yeah,
Greyjoy.
Who should be queen of the Iron Island was kind of, you know, because of all that latent
Viking
homophobia, misogyny, drowning. She would have drowned like a motherfucker. She would have drowned.
Like a motherfucker. So she was actually not. Maybe she was straight in the.
Oh no, I'm not worried about the. Yeah, I think it's actually that much better.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's just that much better that she's.
Except
she's,
HBO
she's,
cut it here, of course. So
we were sitting there, like,
what the hell happened? Like,
you didn't see her getting it on?
Not until we had to rewatch it and went, why did that stop?
You say rewatch it like you're not pirating shit.
Oh no, I am the only millennial in the world that does not, because my background
so
is in media.
I pay for it. But where did you get it from? Where do you get it from?
You can subscribe to HBO.
I know, but everything's geocoded.
Yes, but you still no. You get Game of Thrones on a Monday night at 9 p.m.
No, but you don't get the sexy stuff.
You do on HBO. I feel like I'm an ad for them now. It's on HBO on demand, which is uncensored. So a day later, it's available. You find time in your week to watch
it because
the show is like this impossible thing that I need to get over.
I'm just a Gen X torrenting motherfucker.
See that. That's just not cool, man.
I know it's not, but
people
podcast.
Work their ass off to work in this industry, and what do? We work in this industry.
Yeah, we work our asses off, so we don't have a lot of disposable income to. Anyways, okay. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I thought it was really interesting what's happening with this whole spoiler culture. When I say interesting, I mean infuriating, and people need to stop, particularly the media, whilst we're on it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Here's what we see. Sunday, Monday, we see allusions in a title that says, hey, that thing that happened, here's what we think. And you know there's a thing that happened with maybe this character that they've, or this scene that alludes to a particular, you know, it's easy to guess, you know, which part of Seven Kingdoms that's from. And then the very next day, they've got pieces talking about, with the actual spoiler in the title. And then they'll have the picture and the spoiler in the title. And then on day four, they'll have an analysis of what all that means. And on day five, they look at, so we're now on Friday, Saturday, they start looking at, fan theories, or this fan theory about what this means with this particular thing, and it happens every freaking week.
Okay.
And it just, we've been doing this for 6 weeks, and we need to stop. We need
Why?
To, because it's dumb.
I'm sorry. You are currently part
you,
of the problem.
I am
You're part of the problem.
Of the
you
problem.
Are fueling this
but
sort of
I am
meta-analysis.
I am assuming that you're not going to put any spoilers in the title of this thing.
No, there's not going to be any predictions, but I guess my point is part of your millennial media culture is to kind of... Okay, sorry. That's unfair.
You get one.
I got one.
You
All
get
right,
one.
So you're right. Part of this whole process is that we consume, and then we share our consumption, and then we share the sharing of our consumption. There's sort of this, you know, we're our own, we're kind of this sort of mini Moore's law of media consumption analysis that goes on, and that is part of the pleasure. So, yes, if you haven't watched it, and you were very slow in the early parts, I think what's irking you is the fact that you just can't, you can't not look at Facebook and the tweets and the interwebs. So if you, for those times that you were behind the curve and didn't want to be spoiled, your normal filter for life involves all these different social media threads that inevitably bring it into you. So
I know what to expect.
You could just dial all that stuff down, can't you? Or can't
Why
you?
Should I?
Well, you don't have to, but I mean, again, if you missed the cycle, I mean, part of being in a social media culture is to participate in water cooler moments when they happen.
Okay, that's fair. I will say that
fair.
There is decorum.
I'm a fair and just man.
Sure, let's go with that. There should be some kind of decorum when it comes to... All I'm saying is don't put the spoiler in your header image or in the title, and we're going to be good.
Well, okay.
And what's been interesting is for the first 2 or 3 days, that's been respected. And then the assumption is, if you're in Inner Mongolia, you've probably seen it, so we're just going to talk about what this means. And it's... it just seems.
Well, how about
like
what if? Okay, so again, you know, media industry professional that you are, what if this were a Netflix property, and all 10 episodes were available instantaneously? You're enjoying the incrementality of Game of Thrones right
now. Incrementality?
Yes,
I
have.
You're going to stick by that?
Hashtag incrementality. What I'm saying is, part of what you're enjoying about this is the fact that it does...
The fact that it's delayed or gratification, which is great.
You like my word better? Can't you just...
Okay, the incrementality of the series has actually been quite refreshing.
Right, so...
So what if it was on Netflix?
Good with
that,
yeah, exactly. So what I'm saying is...
I still say don't be an asshole and put it in the title. It's just...
But what I'm saying is none of that would have happened if it were if you binge-watched the whole season in one go, like, you know... Whatever, Orange is the New Black season 4. Everybody's going to like go away from the interweb for a weekend and, you know, pull tubes and watch the whole season. I'm saying everyone. I mean me and maybe some other people, but then it's going to be done and then you can kind of talk about it. So isn't that just part of the dangers of consuming media in a connected age?
I think the internet is made up of conversations.
Yes.
And a lot of the times you can opt in or opt out.
Yeah.
When you put a spoiler in a title, you have opted in, or you have been, you are aware of that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's unfair.
Okay. I hear you. I still think that maybe you just need to...
I'm not going to lighten up because the show has me on mic.
No. I just think for those moments, you just have to, like, do the internet equivalent of sticking your fingers in your ears and going, la, 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 la.
I scroll past. I don't click. I don't read.
Right.
I don't do any of that stuff. I still don't. But you get so much information just scrolling through your Facebook or Twitter feed, or even Instagram for those zealots in my life that decide to take a photo, you know who you are, take a photo of the damn screen and go, guys, guess what I'm watching? Yeah, you and everyone else. All like billion of us.
I know, but, alright. We're gonna have to...
I just said that to annoy you.
Yeah. we're gonna have to draw another line. Okay, so that's like the third, we've agreed to disagree on quick recap, we've agreed to disagree on the fact that George R. R. Martin
is going
to
finish the book.
Right. I say no, you say yes. We're going to...
Can the caveat be that if he dies...
Well, that's the whole premise of my opinion.
Which is really a cruel thing to say.
Okay.
For bad people to say that.
We're not bad. Okay, man, you know, he's living it up. He did a great thing. He, you know, he kick-started this wonderful thing. He clearly...
Are you saying it's not his anymore?
No, I'm just saying that he doesn't necessarily... He's clearly... The man actually grew up in the comic book world, and...
Yeah, and he's letting what happens in the comic book world happen with
this.
Well,
no, but what I'm saying is comic book culture kind of has long been much more communalistic about...
You're just making up words left, right, and center here.
Hey... My podcast, my words.
Okay, your words.
My words.
Hashtag your words.
My word. My podcast, my words. Anyways, I mean, not to psychoanalyze this man in a suspenders and a flat cap, but he has long dealt with properties, both in his writing and his love of comic books, that are both of himself and not of himself. In other words, I think he's kind of gotten used to
passing the buck.
Yeah.
The reins.
Well, not the buck. That implies he's shirking. I think he's happy for somebody else to be kind of fleshing out his
world.
We'll
see. What else have we not agreed on?
Well, we didn't agree on the whole the world. I think that the world he's created and the current writers are envisioning is just commentary on anarchy and the failure of any political system.
Mm.
And you're not willing to go that far.
I'm not, because I think that is too much of an interpretation and not enough of the actual narrative.
Okay.
And also, there's a hole in it. If he never finishes the book, we're never going to find out now, are we?
But
is this some great... This is all very meta now. Is this some great commentary that is not?
What I'm saying... Okay, man, maybe I am saying it's not his anymore.
That's interesting. It's not his anymore.
You can't... Okay.
This is for part two. I will pick up on that.
Fine, all right.
Two.
So
what's the third thing we're going to agree on?
Just what we were talking about. What were we just talking about?
Really old one.
Anyways. All right. So there was a third thing. Readers posted in the comments. Listeners, rather. Readers, too. But, listeners...
That's being presumptive.
Right. So the wrap-up is going to be big Battle of the Bastards, big Daenerys...
Scene
of some sort. I'm projecting two Daenerys scenes. One, she kicks Slaver ass. Two, whatever she does, whether it is Slaver ships, or I actually am holding out for some Viking ships. I think the end of the season is going to be her setting sail.
Okay.
That's where I'm going.
I think she's going to set sail. How she set sail is up in the air.
Got it. All right, so...
Okay, and then in terms of Arya, she's going to get to Westeros somehow.
She's going to be on one of those ships. I think she's actually going to spirit away in the big flotilla back to... I think that's
what's west of west.
Yeah, that's where it's going. And Cersei's just going to Cersei's going to kick a little bit more ass.
She's going to kick a little more ass. I'm a bit sad that that Tommen has been such a bit of a...
Yeah,
weak-willed...
What are you going to do? Maybe she's going to kick his ass, but...
Oh, no, she won't do that. That's part of her whole character, right? She will do whatever it takes to protect her kind.
Right. However, final prediction. Despite that, I think Tommen will die by the end of the season. And that will cause all the Cersei ass-kicking
to happen. Well, the witch said that first. Just saying.
Yeah, okay, fine. So it wasn't a really insightful prediction.
It wasn't a real prediction.
Okay, so what the witch says will happen.
Well, everything else has so far, so we're looking at it from a statistical point of view.
Right. Statistics in Westeros.
I need to put it in my spreadsheet.
Right, okay. So we are going to, sort of crunch some numbers, sort of squeeze some big
data. Tabulate.
Yeah, we're gonna squeeze some big data in the cloud, and we'll get back to you in a couple weeks' time. Thank you guys very much for listening to Dystopian Present. I'm Ross, and I thank you, Nashville, for...
Thank you very much for having me.
And I thank you for using your real name and everything. And we'll be back in 2 weeks to see who owes who a drink. Thanks for listening.